listening to The Kevin Smith Show.
Views expressed on this program are the responsibility of those who make them. They do not necessarily represent the views of Kevin Smith, The Kevin Smith Show, or any of its affiliates.
And welcome to the Kevin Smith Show. Whoever you are, wherever you are, all around this gorgeous place we call Earth, thanks for being here at the Kevin Smith Show. those of you joining us for the very first time, welcome. We're glad to have you. And yes, those of you listening who are longtime listeners detect a little hoarseness in my voice. Yes, indeed. The weather changes and the pollen blowing in and things like that all have their effect, but we're going to get through this, I promise you, and we're going to have a great show this evening with my guest, Giorgio Tsoukalos, and we're going to be talking about the ancient astronaut theory, you know, the theory that in very ancient times, space travelers came here to Earth and met and interacted with humans. He is one of the, if not the leading authority, certainly one of them, and I think probably the leading authority on that theory these days, and he will join us in just a few minutes. You know, I keep pointing out that Robert Felix, who's been a guest here on the show, you know, the author of the book called Not by Fire, But by Ice, I keep pointing out that the things that he said would happen are happening. The climatological changes, and based on his understanding of the way global warming is happening. Now, he says global warming is happening because it's actually ocean warming taking place as a result of volcanoes under the ocean. And there is growing support for that in the scientific community. But one of the things he said that we should look for is record precipitation and record snow. Well, it's happening in China, and China is paralyzed right now because of the worst snowstorms in half a century. Sometimes people send me email and say, well, what do you think is going to happen in 2012? Or sometimes people call into the show and ask that question. I don't know what will happen in 2012. I have no idea. But every time I hear someone talk about how sophisticated we are these days and that, you know, we're not like people who panicked easily, you know, decades ago, and we're much more sophisticated now, every time I think about that and every time I hear about that, a story pops up in the news. In Guangzhou, China, which is a big city in the southern part of China, crowds of frantic Chinese broke out into fights, fighting for seats on the few trains leaving southern China, where the worst winter storms in half a century have crippled the Chinese transport system during its busiest travel season. So there you have it, folks. How sophisticated are we? What happens is Mother Nature simply cannot stand to leave us alone. And we cannot stand what she throws at us. We'll be back with Giorgio Tsoukalos right after this. You know, Valentine's Day is just a few days away, and you don't want to make the mistake of forgetting to say, I love you, to that very special person in your life. Fresh, beautiful red roses say what you feel better than words ever could. And our friends over at 1-800-Flowers have put together something very special to help you express your love. When you purchase a dozen of their spectacular long-stemmed red roses, you'll get another dozen for free. Plus, they come with a beautiful free vase. Click the 1-800-Flowers banner on my website at kevinsmithshow.com and you'll be transported to the special Valentine's Day page at 1-800-Flowers. Send the gift that says more than your words could ever express. Alien Seeker News has blasted off and is providing a new and important resource for everyone interested in UFOs, aliens, alien abductions, Bigfoot, Chupacabra, and more. Featuring five of the top UFO radio talk shows, lots of information and articles in free forums, Alien Seeker News has launched on its journey to greatness. Go to alienseekernews.com, register for the free forums, and get the classic Flying Saucers Are Real by Major Donald Kehoe as a free ebook. Join today. Most of the great music you hear right here on Steel Eye Media Network is supplied by the independent artists from GarageBand.com. If you hear a song you like, go over to GarageBand.com, look it up, download it. You can even buy the group's CDs, in many cases, right there at GarageBand.com. I'll be there in the morning light. My guest this evening is Giorgio Tsoukalos, and he's been with us before. He is the publisher, the editor of Legendary Times. Some of you subscribe to that. It is a magazine that deals with lots and just a whole lot of really cool information about ancient civilizations, and in specific, the ancient astronaut theory. Giorgio, welcome back to the Kevin Smith Show. We're delighted to have you back.
Well, it is my pleasure as well. Thank you very much for having me back on.
You know, just a couple of nights ago, I was watching television, and I have to admit, I dozed off and then woke up and dozed off. It was late at night. There was some documentary on, but one of the times when I woke up, there you were. And so I'm not sure which documentary it was, but there you were, and talking about ancient astronauts. A lot has happened, a lot of water under the bridge since you were last with us. So what's been happening with you in Legendary Times?
Yes, thank you very much for the question. And, things have really been exciting lately because of those TV appearances on National Geographic and on the Travel Channel. I'm not sure which of the two shows, or actually on the Travel Channel, I was on three shows and on a series called Mysterious Journeys. And for the first time ever that I'm aware of, the people that appeared on the Mysterious Journeys episodes, guess what? They had no debunkers on there. because when I appeared on the National Geographic show about ancient astronauts, it was me and Lloyd Pye that who basically were the proponents for the ancient astronaut theory, and then there was about 20 debunkers on that show. Of course, I'm exaggerating in case some critics are listening, but you know, the mainstream science does everything in their power to debunk this idea that many years ago in the remote past, thousands and thousands of years ago actually, we might have been visited by extraterrestrials. And that evidence is available by interpretation by looking at the ancient scriptures and just, you know, ancient cultures in general.
Yeah, you know, I've given some thought to debunkers, actually.
Let me hear yours.
Well, you know, first of all, my personal opinion of them is if they really believe the stuff they're saying, I mean, if they really do, if they really believe it, quite naturally, they have a right to express it, but it would indicate to me they haven't really been looking at evidence. But then here's where I have come with debunkers. God bless them. But the more they talk, the more they prove they're wrong.
And they're digging themselves into a hole. And see, the main thing that they keep bringing up is, for example, Occam's razor. And Occam's razor is a deduction of evidence where it says if you have multiple options, usually the simplest option is the one that is the correct, you know, solution. And I have a little tiff here with Occam, because the bottom line is that Occam's razor was devised in the 13th century when their frame of reference was completely different to our frame of reference today. And the definition says that that only a sufficient answer can be applied to Occam's razor. And what debunkers today claim to be sufficient, ladies and gentlemen, is not sufficient at all, because many, many times little details are left out. Thus, they're ignoring certain things. And, you know, unfortunately, the great majority, you know, doesn't do the research for themselves. So they usually just, you know, go with one side or the other instead of, you know, doing the research.
Yeah, but, you know, there's another way to look at Occam's razor in relationship to the ancient astronaut theory.
Mm-hmm.
Let's say that we're going to go with Occam's razor, which is the simplest, most straightforward explanation is usually the right one. Okay,
correct.
So let's go with that. Here we have some cave paintings or carvings that show some object flying in the sky, and it is in the shape of what we today would call a UFO or flying saucer. It shows it's flying in the sky. And with Occam's razor, I would have to say, okay, these people at that time carving on the walls of a cave could not build one of those, whatever it was. Therefore, they saw it.
I agree with you. And
the simplest explanation, explanation
exactly,
is, hey, it happened.
Hey, absolutely.
And let me tell you this. There's a guy that's on this show every once in a while. Jeff Woolline, and he deals with a lot of petroglyphs.
Ah.
And here's what he said. The petroglyphs, he said, they didn't have video cameras. If they had, we would have videotapes of what they had seen, but they didn't have them. And so what's carved in the rocks, that's the video. That's what they saw.
That is an absolute brilliant thought, and Kevin, if you don't mind, if you could send me his email address, because I'd like to contact that gentleman, because I've for years now been saying that not only do we see a lot of people in our field, they also subscribe to an idea, for example, that you know, it wasn't the beings that are described in the ancient texts and in the traditions aren't necessarily extraterrestrial, but they might be, you know, from a more advanced civilization, but still human. So my rebuttal to that would be, well, we can read in the ancient texts that whenever the natives ask these beings, where are you from, they never pointed across the ocean or across the mountain range and said, we come from over there, but they always pointed towards the sky. And so we have not only oral traditions, but the very, very first written records that we have from all around the world. They all describe these strange beings that a long, long time ago, very human-looking beings, by the way. They weren't, you know, the Hollywood stereotype of ETs. They were, I'm always tempted to say, you know, who looks like whom? I mean, do we look like them or do they look like us? But that's a whole different discussion. But, you know, we have to remind ourselves that back then, writing was an incredibly new invention. And if one of those first stories that those people wrote down is that these strange beings descended from the sky, we should look at this that as lies and figments of their imagination? I don't think so. They wrote stuff down that was happening to them at that very instant. And so it's an insult for Western mainstream archaeology to basically claim that all the ancient stories and mythologies that we have are nothing but an archetype figment of their fantasy.
Yeah. Now, I do a little experiment, Giorgio, every once in a while. I'll do it with you. Long-time listeners have been through this with me. New listeners have not. So you and the new listeners get to do this little experiment, brand new, all right? Here it is. Take a pencil or a pen and a piece of paper.
Got it.
Draw me a picture of a guapple.
Draw you a picture of what?
A guapple. Can't do it, that? Can you? You can't draw pictures of what you haven't seen.
Yeah.
That's my point.
Exactly.
Now, you know, I've had people write to me. I wrote an article and published it in our magazine several years ago about that very thing. And I had people that responded. And I get emails every time I do that little experiment on the air that say, yeah, but I mean, all you have to do is look at science fiction, look at all the stuff they've dreamed up. Everything they dream up is based on something they've seen.
I couldn't have said it better. In fact, you are bringing me to a point that I've actually also written about in one of the issues of Legendary Times, where when I grew up, I went to a school, and right after the Soviet, and maybe we even talked about this the last time I was on the program, but it's such a powerful story where, you know, right after the Soviet Union collapsed, we had a whole bunch of new students from the young students from the former Soviet Union, and I remember sitting in art class, and one of the assignments, our teacher gave us these big blank pieces of paper, and he said, all right, today you just go ahead and draw a fantasy castle that's floating in the air. And of course, everybody, you know, our eyes started to glow and we were all very excited. Oh, wow, we can just go crazy and draw a fantasy castle and things like that. And obviously, such a thing as a fantasy castle does not exist, but, you know, through TV and all those things, you know, and books and magic stories, you know, we can imagine what these things look like. But there has been an initial impetus for our imagination to you know, what that might be. Now, our students from the Soviet Union, they just stood there in front of that piece of paper, and they didn't start to draw. And so the teacher went over there and said, what are you doing? And they said, well, what's a fantasy castle? We've never seen such a thing. And he's like, well, just draw something. Let your imagination go wild. And they wouldn't. They wouldn't move the pen. So I agree with you wholeheartedly, Kevin, that unless you see something or something has been quote unquote, given to you, there is no way that these ancient people could have come up with these bizarre stories of flying machines and flying beings that were traveling at these incredible velocities across the planet. That, you know, that this was all just imagination. Forget it.
Well, here's another thing. Some of those ancient carvings and drawings very definitely show that it is some type of machine or vehicle. It's a machine.
Mm-hmm.
Before there were machines.
Yes, most certainly. In fact, one of the most amazing regions in the world for that is India. And in ancient India, we have these ancient texts called the Mahabharata or the Ramayana, the Rig Veda, some of which are part of the Mahabharata. But anyone can go to the library or to the local bookstore and start, you know, reading the Mahabharata. And let me tell you something. It reads like Star Wars.
It does indeed.
Yeah, I mean, it is amazing. In fact, you know, Kevin, I'd be out of a job if I did this in India, because in India, if I tell people that I try to, my line of work consists of, you know, telling people about the ancient astronaut theory, they look at me in a blank stare saying, what, people need to be convinced of that? Of course, you know, ancient civilizations were visited by quote-unquote gods. I mean, to them, it's perfectly normal. And by the way, when I speak of gods, it has nothing to do with anything spiritual. It is 100%, in the classic ancient astronaut theory, it is 100% nuts and bolts space travelers who came here in a nuts and bolts world many, many thousands of years ago.
Yeah, well, as ancient people use the term that we translate as gods, it doesn't mean a supreme being. It means superior.
Right.
Not supreme.
Exactly. And that's another thing that I'm always, all the critics, you know, throw at me, or the whole idea is that, oh, what, so you believe in extraterrestrials, you don't believe in God? And nothing could be any further from the truth. You know, following the ancient astronaut theory has nothing to do with belief at all. It has nothing to do with religion. It's basically just looking at the facts, and I haven't lost my belief that there is some sort of a universal essence out there. Do I think it's a personal God? Not really, but I most certainly think there is an all-pervasive essence out there, the creation of the universe, or the spirit of the universe, or whatever you want to call it. But that does not mean that I bow down or, you know, worship extraterrestrials in any way, shape, or form. I mean, but those are all just the weird, weird allegations that the debunkers and many other people make when you talk about the UFO phenomenon or ETs in general.
Well, that's true. And, you know, one of the things, I get a lot of flack for this, and I got to tell you, Giorgio, I'm going to get flack for saying it this time. But, you know, even very religious people, and I have a lot of respect for religious people, even
sure.
though I am not a religious person.
Yeah,
I have
but
a lot of respect
okay.
for them. But here's the deal. Even religious people, and we'll say, I'll go ahead and say, Christians who believe the Bible, and that's fine. I got no problem with them. But if they believe it, they have to believe that there are extraterrestrials, and they have to understand that that God that it's talks about in the Bible is an extraterrestrial. Now, here is why I say that. Answer the question. Here it is, folks. Is he from here? Now, if he's not from here, he's extraterrestrial.
I couldn't have said it better myself. And in fact, the whole ancient astronaut theory is based. One of the main pieces of evidence that we use is, in fact, the Old Testament in the Bible, where The God described in the Bible, especially in the Old Testament, in the classic ancient astronaut theory, was not God in the conventional sense, but it was an extraterrestrial. And by that, you know, we have to remind ourselves that, you know, ancient man, especially during the time of the Old Testament, mankind was not stupid. We were not idiots. Our frame of reference, however, was very much different to our frame of reference of today. So, you know, we could not explain that this being flew around in a machine, and so all of a sudden, the vehicle that, you know, quote unquote, God flew around in, became the glory of the Lord. And we have two very magnificent stories in the Bible. For example, about the eyewitness account of the prophet Ezekiel. And right in there, we have incredible descriptions of an ancient machine, ancient flying machine, that not only was seen by Ezekiel, but guess what? He even flew around in it. In fact, there's two parts of the book of Ezekiel. And the first part, he sees the vehicle, and in the second part, the vehicle actually transports him somewhere. He says, and then I was transported on some high mountain. And on that high mountain, I saw something like a temple. Now, let's all remind ourselves that Ezekiel was a priest. And so if he sees something that he describes as something like a temple, well, then it wasn't a temple. So then he is told by this being who wears very, very weird clothes. He says, and the person's clothes were like shimmering like metal. So we have this weird thing that gives Ezekiel a measuring rod. And then the being says, now, Ezekiel, measure this building. And then, for pages upon pages, you can read in the Bible how Ezekiel puts down the exact measurements of that building, inside of which the glory of the Lord landed. Now, back in 1982, a German structural engineer by the name of Hans Herbert Bayer, he, in his free time, being an engineer, a structural engineer, he took out the Bible and he said, you know, let me see what happens if I actually draw up these measurements that I can find here in the second part of the book of Ezekiel. And he came up with this amazing-looking building that looks like a stadium, a square stadium, that's open to the top, so something conceivably can fly and land inside of it. And it looked really amazing. Now, the thing that I haven't told the audience yet is that back in 1976, a man by the name of Joseph Blumrich, he wrote a book called The Spaceships of Ezekiel. Now, who was this Joseph Blumrich guy? He was a NASA engineer involved with developing the Saturn V rocket that went to the moon. And so he is, or was, the proverbial rocket scientist. And so he determined that in the first part of the book of Ezekiel, what we see there, or what is described there, is in fact some sort of a space shuttle. Not a spaceship that brings you from one planet to the next, but, you know, like a shuttle from that brings people from the mothership orbiting Earth towards Earth and back. Now, here's the crazy thing.
About a minute.
Okay, not only did Blumrich make a little model, but when a scale model was made with Blumrich's spaceship and Bayer's Ezekiel temple, the two fit like a glove. It was unbelievable.
Wow.
Yeah.
I had not heard that.
Yeah, and so this is what we're about. This is the stuff that mankind and the mainstream needs to hear, because these things exist.
You know, it also says in Ezekiel that the pilot of one of those craft got out and talked with him, and his head was covered with something that looked like a crystal.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Exactly.
Pretty interesting, isn't it?
Highly fascinating.
We are headed off into a break, and I don't want to get off into something that we have to cut off for the break. Folks, let me remind you that special that is happening at 1-800-Flowers for your Valentine flowers ends February 3rd, so you need to go over there and check it out, all right? The link is on our site. We'll be back right after this.
There seems to be resistance to everything I do. She said it's coming from yourself, and none of it is true. He said, but you don't know the thoughts I have going around and around. She said, I don't have to know that you'll rebound. 'Cause I believe. Getting anywhere. He said, you're brave. You got talent and a certain savoir faire. She said, but you don't know the way I feel with my worry and my fear. He said, I know exactly how you feel in case you need to hear. Before the dawn, and you think you just can't go on, and you're worried about your money.
We are talking this evening with Giorgio Tsoukalos, and we're talking about the ancient astronaut theory. Giorgio, some people can't get over the, you know, we were talking about this, the use of the word gods, and they just can't get over what has been ingrained in them as a definition for gods. And, you know, folks really have to understand, they've really got to get to the point where they understand that you really cannot take a 21st century definition and apply it to these ancient writings and say that's what they meant. That isn't what they meant. That isn't what they were talking about. And, you know, when they talked about gods, they were talking about people with superior technology. and maybe superior knowledge and even wisdom. And did they worship them? Yeah, well, sometimes they did because they were afraid of them.
Well, yeah.
But they ascribe to them things beyond what we would call technological prowess. They didn't ascribe to them wondrous, magical, supreme being type attributes.
Yeah, no, I completely agree. And the one argument that I always try to give here, and you said it as well very beautifully, is that, you know, our ancestors' frame of reference was different than ours, and our ancestors were not stupid. They were not. They were primitive, technologically speaking, but they were not stupid. And here is therein lies the key word: primitive, technologically speaking. And so, I mean, it's the same as we have with Arthur C. Clarke's motto there, you know, anything what's the quote again about the magic? If something you don't understand technologically speaking appears as being magic. So back then, when these gods descended from the sky, of course people thought that these beings had supernatural or magical powers, because they could not explain the nuts and bolts aspect behind their visits. And so a spaceship or a UFO or a rocket or whatever, a nuts and bolts machine, all of a sudden became something that was considered to be supernatural or magical. And of course, the gods, lowercase g, they, you know, got a kick out of that, because, quite honestly, who wouldn't? I mean, eventually, yeah, 500 years down the road, if we arrive on a different planet that hosts intelligent life, but they're technologically speaking still primitive, are we just going to stand back and watch? I mean, just like, you know, Star Trek's prime directive would argue, I say no way, because our egos are so inflated that, of course, we, you know, tell them what to do and you know, hey, you place this stone over here and you place that stone over there. And like and that's how, you know, some of these ancient monuments were in fact built, and we can read about this in the ancient texts. And you know, Kevin, and I've said this the last time, but, you know, the classic ancient astronaut theory does not say that the pyramids were built by aliens. That's just baloney, such an explanation. Uh-huh. Even though there are people who say that, but I and Eric von Däniken and everybody representing the classic ancient astronaut theory has never said such or never claimed such nonsense, because, of course, the pyramids were built by human beings with the assistance of those extraterrestrials, and therein lies a big difference.
Let me talk about two examples here of something that you have just made a very good point. Of saying, and that is that they were technologically primitive, but not stupid. Mm-hmm. And while you were talking about that, I was thinking, you know, I'm an old guy. I'm 54 years old.
Oh, yeah, very old, very old.
Well, I've seen a lot of history. I mean, I remember when Ike Eisenhower was president, you know. Mm-hmm. But if you just think back to what life was like then, And let's use one example. Wireless or cordless remote control for your television. We didn't have those. And in fact, most people, when I was a kid, didn't have televisions. And then as more and more people got televisions, they were black and white, most of them. And then, you know, it was the color televisions began to become popular. But there still were not these wireless remote controls. We take it for granted now. But that was a wondrous thing when they came out. What about cell phones? Now, I don't know how old you are, but I think you're old enough that you will remember when the first cell phones came out.
It looked like a brick.
Yeah, it did. It was the size of a brick.
Mm-hmm.
Had a long antenna on it.
Yes.
Remember
absolutely.
That?
Absolutely. Yeah, of course.
Yeah. And now, yeah. You know, they're the size of a credit card.
Yeah, and back then, that thing that was the size of a brick was the latest and most cutting-edge technology, and people looked at people who had that type of phone, they marveled at them.
Oh,
and
yeah.
Now you walk around with something like this and you have a cramp laughing.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I don't think if you had one that was still functional, I don't think it would operate any longer because I think the frequencies have changed.
Yes, that's another point. Absolutely.
But so there's a case. Were we stupid back then? No. But we just didn't have that technology yet. Now, here's another example. I spent 2 years living on the island of Timor.
Mm-hmm.
Now, the island of Timor is, these people are not stupid. So before any Americans start thinking that these people are primitive and stupid because many of them live in grass huts, please understand, most of you Americans, and I am one, but most of you Americans, most of us Americans, speak one language. Most of those people speak 4 or 5 languages. Yet, when I told them, I started talking with them about when America sent men to the moon, they looked at me with a puzzled look.
Mm-hmm.
And they couldn't believe it. You know, men have been on the moon? And I said, well, yeah, that's what NASA says, and we have videos and stuff, and yeah, people went to the moon. And I'll never forget this interpreter that I had. Looked at me with a very puzzled look. She said, America sent men to the moon? I said, yeah. And she said, why? Darn good question. Because we wanted to go, I guess. But, you know, these are people who, when the sun goes down, light their homes with candles. And so did I while I was there.
Mm-hmm.
They have no electricity, no television. I mean, it's primitive living. But that doesn't mean that these people are stupid.
Yeah,
They're very, very, very smart people.
Absolutely, and that I think those two examples are truly wonderful, and they bring home the point. And I mean, just imagine for a moment that. We could time travel. And let's also argue for a moment that I can bring with me a TV set, a DVD player, and a DVD. And I'm going to have coffee, or wine actually, wine and grapes with Julius Caesar. Well, how would you explain the concept and the idea and how a DVD player works with a television set? You can try anything you want. Caesar was not stupid, but he will never understand. So let's assume also that I travel back in time to present day and I leave behind this. No, actually, I'll take it with me. I'll take it with me so there's no rift in the time continuum. But if Caesar talks to his friends and his fellow delegates what he had just seen, then he will not say that he has seen a DVD player or a television set, but he will say that he has seen a shimmering disc and he has seen a stone that was able to glow, and that stone was able to show him visions and pictures. That's what he would say.
Yeah, you have to describe it in the frame of reference that you've got.
Yes. So right there, I mean, that is such a logical explanation that if we have these weird, strange descriptions of these bizarre things that happened thousands and thousands of years ago, let's look at it from a modern perspective and ask, what is it exactly our ancestors tried to tell us here? Because, and I think now we've really hammered this point home, our ancestors were not stupid. In fact, they were highly intelligent, but they just couldn't grasp their head around or wrap their head around certain technological aspects that were dangled in front of them, and rightly so.
Yeah, and we have that same thing today because... when we come back, we're headed into a break. I'll tell you something that a remote viewer said on this show. Well, I'll say it now, and then we'll head to break. In remote viewing Mars, the remote viewers saw machines that are not just machines. They are actually living, but they are machines, and we don't have a way to describe it. That's what he said. All right, folks, we are headed into the break, and on the other side of this break, we'll continue with Giorgio Tsoukalos. He is the publisher and editor of Legendary Times. Kevin Smith Show selects one of its very best shows each week and turns it into a free podcast? Well, it's true. You can download free Kevin Smith Show podcasts right now and get a free fresh podcast each week. Do you want to start building your own library of Kevin Smith Shows? All you have to do is visit our website at kevinsmithshow.com and click the free podcast link. They're yours for the download. We are talking this evening with Giorgio Tsoukalos. He is the editor and publisher of Legendary Times. And it is a magazine that is focused on the ancient astronaut theory. Now, you have traveled all over the world, Giorgio. And I think you've been in something like over 50 countries looking for and looking at ancient artifacts, photographing them, many of them not available to the general public. What's the most amazing thing that you've come across?
Quite honestly, there is no such thing as most amazing, because there has been so many occasions where my mouth just dropped open and I was at a loss for words. So, you know, there wasn't just one. So there's multiple instances where I would say this is one of the most amazing things I've ever seen. And guess what? I'm not going to say the pyramids, because granted, Kevin, they're amazing, and nobody will ever describe to you the feeling that you have in your stomach the first time you see them. I mean, it's truly, truly magnificent. It's massive. However, in and around the Giza Plateau, there are other things that are even more incredible, like subterranean tunnels and chambers, and in which there are sarcophagi made out of granite that are so massive that you really have no idea how they got it in there, in these underground chambers, because we're talking 30, 40, 50 yards deep underground, straight down through narrow passageways. Meaning that whatever is at the end of those passageways, deep inside the earth, these big tombs, these one is a sarcophagus, two are sarcophagi, are bigger, larger than the passageways. So how the heck did they, you know, transport these things in there? I mean, it's truly a mind-boggling thing. And then, for example, in the highlands of Bolivia in the Andes, right next to Lake Titicaca, we have a site that's world famous called Tiahuanacu, and every day you have literally hundreds upon hundreds of tourists that arrive there, and they take a couple of pictures of the famous Gate of the Sun or the Gate of the Moon, and then they all, you know, and everybody is profusely sweating because it's at 12,000 feet altitude. It's very hot, thin air. So, but then everybody, you know, goes back into the bus, and boom, they drive back to Sucre, to the Bolivian capital, and to have dinner at their hotel. But nobody knows that only 50 yards from Tiahuanacu, there is an even more mysterious site called Kumapunku. And you'd be hard-pressed to find anything about that place in any of the textbooks, archaeological or otherwise, that will tell you about Kumapunku. And the reason why they don't tell you, or there's nothing written about these things, is because the place is truly inexplicable. You have blocks of stone or platforms of solid stone that are on one side up to 20 yards long and 10 yards wide and about a half a yard thick, one piece that just sits there. It is absolutely mind-boggling. And then the surrounding areas there, you have walls that look like almost like Lego pieces that interlock with each other. Mm-hmm. And if you touch them, Kevin, it's as if you were to touch, you know, a bathroom mirror. That's how smooth and precise everything has been worked and dressed. And so if you ask the natives, by the way, who built this? Was it you guys? Was it your ancestors? They will all look at you and say, no way, it wasn't us. And then you ask, well, so who was it then? Oh, well, It was certainly, this was like this since the beginning of time. It was certainly before us. Okay, so I ask you again, who built it? Oh, los dioses, which means the gods. Yes. Mm-hmm. So right there we have living mythology from ancestors or heirs of ancestors still live there, and they agree it was built by the gods. Now, should we just say, oh, baloney, they're lying, or what the heck do they know? They're just stupid and primitive, so of course they'll say the gods because they won't think that their ancestors were able to do this? Let me tell you, I've been there on multiple occasions, and to build something as magnificent as Puma Punku, there's one requirement that is needed to build this, and that is you need to know, you must know how to write. You must have some sort of a script, you know, to draw up plans, because, you know, this goes here, that goes there, and, you know, the different levels of construction, so on and so forth. Now, in one thing, mainstream archaeology completely agrees, and that is that the Aymara Indians, or the natives of that plain up there, do not have a writing script from back in that time. So right there, the archaeologists are contradicting themselves, because they say the Aymara did it, and then they say no, they didn't have any writing. And how could you ever do something like this without putting this on a construction plan first? I mean, it's impossible. So
wow.
I mean,
now let me ask you about Puma Punku.
Mm-hmm.
Has anybody determined what is it? Is it a palace? Is it a temple? What is it?
No, it most certainly is not. It is probably one of the oldest remnants of any type of civilization on the planet, which, by the way, also begs the question whether or not North and South America truly, and of course to me it's a rhetorical question, how that they were colonized or populated through, you know, out of Africa, through Europe, through Russia, and then through the Bering Strait. I mean, that, by logic, would dictate that the oldest settlements would have to be found here in North America. But the fact of the matter is, and any archaeologist even will agree with you, mainstream archaeologists, that the oldest settlements are found in South America. I mean, that makes no sense if North and South America were settled or populated through the Bering Strait, which, as we all know, is up in Alaska. So, to return to the question of what Puma Punku was, nobody knows. I mean, really nobody knows. And personally, I have a hunch that it might have been, I am not saying on the record that it was, might have been a base camp for the extraterrestrials. Because the platforms there are truly massive, and right now, those platforms, it looks as if some gigantic force, some sort of a violent explosion or a cataclysmic event, ripped this whole site apart. I mean, it's really, and so it's very difficult to actually paint a picture, you know, what this thing looked like. Now, here's a great idea for our listeners. If we have some sort of a some graphic designers or people that are savvy with computers, we should organize an expedition up there, put all these items that are still visible into a computer program, and see what the computer comes up with by trying to piece these Lego pieces together. I mean, it's truly fascinating.
All right, we're 1 minute away from break, and when we come back, I want to ask you to talk with me about something, and that is your opinion of these extraterrestrials' temperament. I mean, are these good guys who have only our best interest at heart, or are there some bad guys in the bunch? And we have a flash message from Italy that is sort of directed that way, in that direction. And we'll get to the flash message. As we head off into the break, ladies and gentlemen, let me remind you, for all of you who are members you subscribe to our members area. This Saturday night is when I'll be in the chat room. And what time should you go to the chat room? Same time you tune in to listen to the show, okay? So I'll be in the chat room for a couple of hours Saturday night. I'll just hang out with you and answer whatever questions you might have if I know the answers. If you're not a member, join now and you can be a part of that, all right? We'll be back on the other side of this break with Giorgio Tsoukalos, and we will also open up the telephone lines and take your calls. Most of the great music you hear right here on Steel Eye Media Network is supplied by the independent artist from GarageBand.com. If you hear a song you like, go over to GarageBand.com, look it up, download it. You can even buy the group's CDs, in many cases, right there at GarageBand.com. Okay, folks, this is what you've been waiting for, your vacation of a lifetime. It awaits your arrival down under in beautiful and historic Hobart, Tasmania. And to make sure your holiday really is a dream come true, you'll be staying at the Bath Street Apartments. Here are just a few of the things that you'll enjoy in your home for the holidays. Stunning water and mountain views from all windows and from your own private balcony or veranda. Modern furnishings, a full modern kitchen with all new appliances, oven and hot plates, fat-free grill, full-size refrigerator, large-capacity microwave oven, cappuccino machine, dishwasher, and enough crockery, cutlery, and utensils to satisfy anyone's culinary desires. The lounge room has an extensive range of electronic home entertainment equipment, including, now get this, a big-screen TV, free digital satellite, pay TV on Foxtel All-Star with over 60 channels, DVD, video, wireless broadband connection, free local telephone calls from the in-room telephone with your own private telephone number so loved ones and friends can call you directly. The bathroom? Wow, the bathroom has a large spa bath, separate shower cubicle, ceiling-mounted heat lamp and fan and hair dryer, and it just gets better and better. Folks, you've got to see Bath Street Apartments. So click the banner over on the Kevin Smith Show website or just go to bathstreetapartments.com.au. Your dreams are awaiting your arrival. You know, Valentine's Day is just a few days away, and you don't want to make the mistake of forgetting to say, I love you, to that very special person in your life. Fresh, beautiful red roses say what you feel better than words ever could. And our friends over at 1-800-Flowers have put together something very special to help you express your love. When you purchase a dozen of their spectacular long-stemmed red roses, you'll get another dozen for free. Plus, they come with a beautiful free vase. Click the 1-800-Flowers banner on my website at kevinsmithshow.com and you'll be transported to the special Valentine's Day page at 1-800-Flowers. Send the gift that says more than your words could ever express.
Call the Kevin Smith Show at 1-800-289-1092.
A reminder, folks, that special for Valentine's Day, the flowers, ends February the 3rd, so you need to get over there and take care of that, okay? All right, we are talking with Giorgio Tsoukalos, actually Tsoukalos, I said it wrong. I thought I would get through the whole show and not do it, but I did it.
But I've been impressed, let me tell you. Very much so. You're doing a great job with the pronunciation, actually.
Well, thank you. I said before the break that I wanted to know your opinion of these extraterrestrials. Are these good guys, just have our best interest at heart, wouldn't do anything to hurt us, or are there some bad guys in the bunch?
I would have to say absolutely both. Because, you know, it's this weird stigma or idea that especially people in the UFO field have, that, you know, the moment that UFOs will show up or something, that, you know, or people in the UFO field actually pray that UFOs show up in order to save us or you know, solve our problems. And I think that is such a wrong and fatal attitude to just, you know, put our feet on the table and wait for some weird extraterrestrials to show up to help us or solve our problems. Because, you know, I really am 110% convinced that there is something like an intergalactic club out there, that there is multiple advanced civilizations out there that have mastered space travel, and that eventually we might be able to join that intergalactic club. However, joining that intergalactic club is not a right. It's a privilege. And right now, Kevin, right now we're not doing too great on this planet. And to be honest with you, have we ever tried to officially make contact with a heap of chickens? No. And so, you know,
analogy.
So to return to the original question, I really think that in that intergalactic club out there, you know, it's truly something right out of Star Wars or Star Trek, where, you know, good fights evil and evil fights good and so on and so forth, because, you know, good permeates the entire universe and so does evil. To think that, you know, egotism or egocentrism or being a crook stops if you all of a sudden are able to travel to a distant planet, I mean, philosophically, that makes absolutely no sense. And in reality, it makes no sense either.
Mm-hmm.
So truly...
So it's both.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
All right, let's go to the phone line. Last time you were on, we tried to go to the phone line. We had somebody playing with us. But we don't have those problems much anymore. Caller, you're live on the Kevin Smith Show. Yeah, well, you know, we had that last time, didn't we?
I don't remember that we had a signal like that, but it's okay. It's okay. We'll manage.
1-800-289-1092. We'll try the telephone line again. I was going to read a flash message. Ladies and gentlemen, you just heard the reason I don't answer calls during a break. That's why. All right. Caller, you are live on the Kevin Smith Show. Your first name and from where are you calling?
Hello, yes. This is Kevin from Iroquois Falls, Ontario.
Yes, Kevin. Go ahead.
And, Giorgio, yes, in the Bible it mentions that there was war in heaven, and you also mentioned that both good and evil for beings had traveled here from afar. Could that be a reference to perhaps two different alien species that were here that were battling in the skies, and the primitive people just thought it were people having war in heaven?
Absolutely, and Kevin, that's Kevin, right?
Yes.
That's such a great question. In fact, see, the Bible, especially the Old Testament, whenever the ancient astronaut theory talks about the Bible, 99.999% of all cases we refer to the Old Testament. And in there, we have many references to angels, but also to species and beings that are called the Anunnaki or the Nephilim, and those are specifically speaking, not spiritual beings, as in that they were just, interdimensional, or that they, just appeared out of thin air, but they were in fact nuts and bolts, flesh and blood extraterrestrials that were misinterpreted by our ancestors as gods, lowercase g, or as these magical, super, natural beings. And for example, in Genesis, we have the saying that, God, and then God created man in their image. Now, right there, grammatically, that sentence doesn't make much sense. And so many theologians, they've come up with this nonsense story about, that just refers to the Trinity, that God is, the Holy Spirit, Jesus, and God, so the Holy Trinity, and that's why it's there. But that's all nonsense, because in ancient Hebrew, the word for God is Elohim. And if you ask any reputable linguist and theologian to translate properly the word Elohim into English, then he or she will have to tell you, if they're not lying to you, that Elohim is a plural, and it means, in fact, the gods with S. So then the sentence would read, and then the gods created man in their own image, and boom, it makes sense. Now, I am not saying that mankind was created by extraterrestrials. That's not what the classic ancient astronaut theory postulates. What we postulate is that evolution existed, survival of the fittest, so on and so forth, but between previous ancestor species of Homo sapiens, Neanderthal and Afarensis, and all these different homos that we had back then, there it was a quantum leap that occurred that even Darwin admitted at the end of his book, the Origin of Species, he admitted something happened and I don't know what, and that's called the famous missing link. And so the ancient astronaut hypothesis proposes that quantum leap did occur because of a targeted artificial mutation of our genes. And as far out as that might sound, it's what scientists today do in the laboratory every day. I mean, we live in very exciting times in genetics. I mean, we're crossing animals now. We're cloning. We're doing this. We're doing that. So all I'm saying is that history simply is repeating itself.
I'm going to send you my book.
Thank you.
you just sold a bunch of copies of my book. I appreciate it.
All right.
Yeah, because my book is called Gods in the Garden. It's about Genesis, the Genesis story of creation. And everything you just described is actually not implied, but it actually says it in Genesis.
Well, Kevin, representing the ancient astronauts here, I must be careful what I say. Of course I'm on the side with you, so I'm sorry. Go ahead.
Well, I'm not going to say more about it other than, lots of times people think they know what that story is in Genesis. They don't. They know what they were told. But it's written with words, and words have definitions, and when you read it and you just let it say what it says instead of what some theologian told you it means, it actually says what you just said.
Mm-hmm.
All right, we're going to the phone line again. Caller, you're live on the Kevin Smith Show. Your first name and from where are you calling?
This is Michelle from Quebec.
Okay, Michelle, go ahead.
Yes, my question for your guest is, there's over a million tablets still untranslated in Sumerian. And we just found, remember I sent you an email about they just found some bodies 80 to 100,000 years old?
Yeah.
And they want to do some DNA testing on this. Does he think we're going to find something out about this? there, and what's the problem? Why can't we get more of these Sanskrits done, the chloroform done?
Oh, okay. All right. Giorgio, were you able to hear Michelle?
Yes, yes, and faintly, but I was able to hear it just fine. Well, the reason why not more research is done is, sorry to tell you, money. The research funds for this type of work is simply not freed, and deliberately so, because a lot of these ancient texts, especially what we find on ancient Sumerian clay tablets or on the cylinder seals or whatever have you, they are filled with ancient references of these ancient beings. They're called the guardians of the sky or the teachers from heaven. That a long, long time ago in the remote past descended from the sky in these weird, you know, winged disks of the sun or sun disks. I mean, all very, very bizarre descriptions. If you decide to look at it from an 1850s perspective, but we're in 2008 now, and the time has come to look at these things with a modern perspective. And you mentioned something very interesting about DNA testing briefly, and I got to tell you this, that, you know, to go back to the last question, we live in very exciting times, speaking with genetics, and the human genome essentially has been decoded. And what they found is that you only need about 4% of the human DNA to recreate, quote-unquote, or clone yourself as a human being, and that all the other 90-95% of your human DNA is what they refer to as genetic junk. And I have to say something about that. I really think that genetic junk, that in there somewhere, just because we today consider this to be junk material, DNA is an amazing storage facility for information. So who knows if the ultimate proof, ultimate piece of evidence is not found somewhere out in the field of some archaeological site, but it's in fact inside of each and every one of us, inside our DNA, because like we've established that there was a genetic alteration of our genes, that somehow has to be able to be proven. And what if that is to be found inside our genes, and I predict it will.
I'll tell you,
who knows? In some cases, it might already have been, and they're just not telling us.
Well, they have told us that we have 223 genes that have no evolutionary precursors.
Mm-hmm, correct.
That's 223 genes that are not from here. That's what that means. All right, folks, we're going back to the phone line. Caller, you're live on the Kevin Smith Show. Your first name and from where are you calling?
Oh, this is Chris from Grand Rapids, Michigan.
Yes, Chris.
Good evening, gentlemen.
Good evening.
I just have to say how fascinating this topic really is, and I really appreciate the way Giorgio delivers the information and breaks it down. And I guess just kind of an observation and a comment. Life seems so cyclic, you know, and you're digging into the past and looking at things that are just so fascinating to us now, and to that culture and that time period, you know, that was their life, that was their now, you know. They expressed it the best they could, like today, you know, we're tampering on the kind of the edges of being gods ourselves with, you know, just like you were talking about the DNA structures and the strands and the human genome. It seems like we're kind of getting to that point now in our society and culture where, you know, somebody's going to be looking back at us 200,000 years from now and looking at our culture and our time with what we've left behind and the things that we've left for our children to kind of see, and to see what we believed and what we thought, how we lived as a people. And I just appreciate how you guys are allowing these topics like this to kind of let us know that we're preparing for the future by looking at our past. And I, like I said, I just want to thank you guys. It's excellent that you're doing this.
Well, thank you. I appreciate the comment.
I'm blushing right now. I'm totally blushing. Come on.
Thank you, Chris.
Yeah, thank you very much.
Very good comments. Two quick flash messages. One from Australia here. Actually, both of these are from, one's from Phil in one country, and one's from Philip in another country. So here's the first one. This one from Australia. It says, hi, Kevin. Assuming that there were ETs at Pumapunku, why were they here, and why did they leave? What do you think, Giorgio?
That's a very good question. The first question, why did they come here, is because... see, the universe, forget the universe, our galaxy alone, or even our region of the galaxy is such a vast place. And even though, as Carl Sagan said, there are billions and billions of galaxies out there and billions of solar systems, which would imply, let's say, that there is millions and millions of civilizations out there. The universe is so vast, or our galaxy is so vast, that let's say you had a big painting of our galaxy, and every habitable or actually inhabited solar system is a little pin on that big canvas. You could actually see all of those pins. They're very far apart, but you can look at it, and so each one of these planets, they would be almost like a beacon, and. Because the main argument skeptics or critics say is, well, why the heck should they have come to Earth? They would have never found us. But of course, because number one, their instruments, their tools for observation are different to what we have today. And number two, of course they would come here because we are an inhabited planet, that we have a signature of life here, that other life forms are able to trace and pinpoint. And the question, why have they left? Well, I have to tell you that all of these ancient stories say, yes, we're going to leave now, but we will come back. And that's why you have all these religions today where you have this bizarre promise of a savior coming back, and that goes directly back or is a direct result of these extraterrestrials promising their return. And just as a quick side note, if you and I, Kevin, were to build a spaceship and you were to leave and travel throughout the galaxy, and on board of your ship 2 years pass. You have a little clock that you travel with, and on the spaceship 2 years pass, and then you come back here on Earth. Depending on what speed you traveled while you were out there, here on Earth, 1,000 years will have passed. Now, that's Einstein's theory of relativity, and I'm not even going to get into it, but it's a physical fact. It's called it's the phenomenon of time dilation, and that's just how it is. That time passes slower in outer space than it does here on Earth. So, the extraterrestrials left, and when they come back, to them it seems that they've only been gone for 2 years, but here on Earth, thousands of years have passed. And so therefore, you have these weird intervals of thousands of years where in our ancient record you can tell that, you know, these gods came at that and that point. These gods came at that point. And then there is these ancient kings lists of rulers where our ancestors wrote down that this particular king or this particular deity ruled for 14,000 years, for 32,000 years, for 16,000 years. And this is all in writing. It's etched in stone. And what do mainstream archaeologists do today? say, I'm sure they meant 14,000. That's incorrect. They must have meant moon years or seconds or some baloney where, I mean, who knows if this planet has been inhabited for millions of years? We don't know.
It has. Well, I'll tell you, I think it has been, and
yes.
I'll tell you why. There are carvings in South America that show humans with spears going after
hunting dinosaurs.
Dinosaurs.
Yes. You're referring to the Inca stones.
That's
absolutely.
Right.
You know, and for all we know, that in Texas, there are in a riverbed there have been footprints found of human footprints inside or next to dinosaur footprints.
Absolutely. That's at Glen Rose, Texas.
Yep.
Yeah.
You know, so, I mean, obviously, you know, there's some speculation out there whether these are real or not, but those are not the only examples. I mean, examples of such a long history on our planet
are
all over the place.
Fossilized footprints, sandal prints now.
Yes.
Okay, so this is not something that, you know, it just looks like a footprint. These are sandal prints.
That's a fossilized hammer
that
was found. I mean, where the hammerhead, in fact, that's one article that we just published in the latest issue of Legendary Times. That hammerhead is made of an iron ore that we today, and this is now has been confirmed by university professors and researchers, we today could not reproduce that hammerhead from that fossilized hammer. And right there, all these things are just brushed under the carpet. Let's not talk about it, because you know what? Those questions are extremely inconvenient.
Aren't they? Here's a question that you got close to answering this one even before I asked it, but this is the flash message from Phil. No, mm-hmm. from Philip. And it says, he wants me to ask you, at what point in time in Earth's history did these ancient astronauts appear on Earth? And he says, I mean, did they appear 10,000 or 100,000 years ago?
Well, we know the classic ancient theory maintains that for sure one or two visits occurred between 16,000 years ago and 10,000 years ago. Those two are very much theoretically confirmed. And then, of course, we have, you know, the idea that for thousands of years, i.e., you know, between 3,000 to 4,000 years, there was an active interaction going on between mankind and these extraterrestrial gods. And again, they were not gods. They were misinterpreted flesh and blood beings that happened to be here. But now, am I discounting that they might have been here 100,000 years ago or 250,000 years ago? Absolutely not, because to say that that did not happen, it would be the height of human arrogance.
Well, you know, maybe they were here, and we don't know.
Right.
Maybe they were here. We do have evidence that there was human life here millions of years ago, although that doesn't fit with classical archaeology or evolution.
It does not.
However, you know, the problem is when you have fossilized remains, including a finger, a fossilized human finger from something like 300 million years ago, it's been x-rayed. It's not a stone that looks like a finger. It's been x-rayed. It has a bone in it. All right. I mean, the thing is a finger, and it comes from about something like 300 million years ago. How do you explain that if there were no humans here? I mean, somebody lost a finger, and they had to have been here to do it. So, you know, regardless of the theories, see, this is one of the reasons, Giorgio, that I say Darwin is dead. Now, that doesn't mean that I think there's no such thing as evolution, but Darwin's theory is dead. And, you know, the timeline is wrong.
Yeah, of course. I mean, look, he even himself, see, this is what's wrong with mainstream science today. Darwin never, ever claimed that his theory was 100% correct.
That's true.
I've read The Origin of Species. If you're into that kind of stuff, it's very interesting. He's a humorous writer, in fact. But he even, you can tell, though, and it's a thick book, but, I mean, if you have time, if you need something to go to sleep with at night...
That's a good one, yeah.
It's a good one.
We have to go to a break, Giorgio. I'm sorry, but we'll be back right after this, folks. More of your telephone calls at 1-800-289-1092. I will open the phone and begin to answer calls right after this break.
Get it all. Become a member at kevinsmithshow.com.
Call the Kevin Smith Show at 1-800-289-1092.
My guest is Giorgio Tsoukalos, and he is the publisher and editor of Legendary Times magazine. And we're talking about the ancient astronaut theory. That is what that magazine is about, and it is fascinating, folks. You need to get your hands on that. Giorgio, before we go too much further, let me say that, folks, there is a link on my website, as always, to the guest website. So there's a link right beside Giorgio's picture. So if you click that, it'll take you over to his website. Now, how can they subscribe to your magazine there at your website, Giorgio?
Yeah, in fact, what I'm doing right now, since I'll be speaking at the UFO Congress on February 25th in Laughlin, Nevada, if people go to legendarytimes.com, in the yellow menu bar, it says free info. And if you put your name and address in there, I'll send you a free copy of the latest issue of Legendary Times, you know, along with a membership form. But once you'll see the magazine, which, by the way, is completely empty, there are no ads in there. It's empty of ads. It's only articles, 880 pages of articles.
All right, there you have it, folks. Go over to legendarytimes.com or legendarytimesmagazine.com?
It's legendarytimes.com, and you go, you click on free info, you put your name and information in there, and as soon as I have it, I'll send out a copy to you right away.
All right. Okay, folks, the telephone line is open, and the telephone number, if you wish to make a toll-free call and talk with our guest, is 1-800-289-1092. 1-800-289-1092. That will get you right here into the studio, and you can talk with our guest. If you live outside of North America, you can send me a flash message. Just send an email to flash@kevinsmithshow.com with your questions or comments, and I'll read them, and we'll ask Giorgio to respond to them. And we have one, so let's go to it. It says, could these ancient astronauts be human beings from the future who have mastered the science of time travel and simply are time traveling into their past, and we're seeing evidence of their trips through the artifacts that they leave behind, and also their interactions with the people of the past? Now, you talked about this earlier, so perhaps this listener didn't catch that, or maybe was not able to listen at that point. But what do you think about that?
I think that's a very, very interesting proposal. However, I think, personally, the likelihood of time travel to occur before interstellar travel happens is infinitely smaller than, you know, a species traveling from star to star. I think, you know, meddling with time is more difficult, even more difficult, than traveling from star to star.
Mm-hmm.
So,
Well, you also mentioned that in the ancient writings, when the ancient peoples ask them, where did you come from, they don't point across
Thank
the
you.
Ocean or point to the
yes.
mountains.
Or they would have said, they would have said, thank you for, yeah, thank you, Kevin. They would have said, oh, you know, or they did not say, well, we are you from the future.
Mm-hmm.
See, because that would be very easy for them to say. And like we established, our ancestors were not stupid, so they could have handled that information also. Oh, they're us, but just from the future. Because the concept of the future, the present, the past is not very difficult for anyone to understand. Even though, by the way, there are languages or people that of cultures today that do not have a word for tomorrow or next week.
As a matter of fact, I told you about living on that island.
Mm-hmm.
Their language is fascinating. It's called Tetun.
Uh-huh.
It's fascinating because it has
only the present tense.
There you go. See, exactly. Okay. Mm-hmm.
So yeah. If you want to say, in 3 weeks I'll be running a race, you can't say that. You can say, after 3 weeks, I am running race. If you want to say, 3 weeks ago, I ran a race, you say, before 3 weeks, I am running race.
Wow.
For
see,
them, the
so
future and the past, for them, the future and the past exist concurrently with now.
Yeah. So right there. So I guess then that would be my answer.
And this is kind of hard for people to get their minds around when they're trying to learn that language, but I think it plays well with what we're talking about in that their concept of time is based on this. If I am going to be doing it in 3 weeks, it's the same as I am doing it now. You'll see it in 3 weeks. If it happened 3 weeks ago, it's the same as it's happening now. We saw it 3 weeks before, but what was, is, and what is, will be, it's the same.
Right.
So it all collapses into present tense.
Yeah, it does. It does.
You know, we were talking about what did these ancient gods say about where they came from? And I think one of the stories that everybody's familiar with, at least to some degree, is the story of the Dogons.
Yes.
And when they asked asked the gods, where did they come from and where did we come from, they pointed to the dog star.
They pointed to the Sirius star system. Now, that is a very fascinating story, which was put beautifully into a book called The Sirius Mystery by Robert Temple. And it basically postulates that there's an African tribe called the Dogon, and every 50 years they have what they call the Harvest and Rice Festival, and it truly still today takes place only every 50 years. And when ethnologists arrived there and asked them, well, what's this for? They said, oh, well, because we celebrate our god's star system's sister star. And of course, the ethnologists were completely flummoxed by all this. And they said, what are you talking about? Are you insane? And they're like, oh, no, look. So they showed those ethnologists some rock drawings, petroglyphs, on which the Sirius star system was engraved. And strangely enough, the Sirius star system was known to to modern science for many, many years, but the Dogon in the 50s claimed that the Sirius star system had an invisible twin, a sister star. It's a binary system, and one of the stars cannot be seen. It's invisible, and it's called Sirius B. And very, very famously, Sirius B, that sister star, second star that is invisible, was confirmed by modern astronomers in the 60s. And we have evidence that the Dogon, and by the way, the sister, the invisible star, only approaches the main star every 50 years. And the Dogon knew that. And when the ethnologist asked them, well, how do you know this? They said, well, it was our creator god, Nammo, N-O-M-M-O, who was an amphibious being who during the day would, you know, dwell amongst the Dogon and teach them in astronomy and agriculture, and he built a school and so on and so forth, but all day he never ate. He never ate anything. And at night, he would just, you know, walk into the lake and just disappear, and then the next day he would walk out of the lake again. I mean, very bizarre. This amphibious being that, by the way, at first did not speak the Dogon's language, and only after, according to their tradition, after 3 weeks did he know how to speak their language. I mean, you know, so right there, that is evidence that he was not a supernatural being, but in fact an advanced, technologically speaking, astronaut who had, with some computers or whatnot, had to learn the language first. And so, highly, thank you. I mean, highly fascinating story, Kevin, about this the Dogon tribe and the Sirius mystery.
Yeah, and that's a case where you're dealing with people who are technologically backward, primitive technologically.
Or just not there yet.
Yeah.
Just not there yet.
But certainly had knowledge way beyond what modern science possessed. And, you know, how did they know? The same thing, well, I see we're headed into break, but the same thing can be said for the ancient Sumerians, who knew about all the planets in our solar system long before so-called modern science had discovered all those planets, and they knew about another one, too, that modern science is still saying doesn't exist. We'll be back right after this break, more with Giorgio Tsoukalos, and your calls, your comments, your questions, and your flash messages, 1-800-289-1092.
Get it all. Become a member at KevinSmithShow.com.
Call the Kevin Smith Show at 1-800-289-1092.
Don't forget, this Saturday evening is the is our monthly chat in the members area, all right? So if you all you members go to the chat room this Saturday evening. Go at the same time that you listen to this show. I'll be hanging out in there. I'll be answering questions and just chatting and whatever, you know, whatever. All right? We'll be there. And I look forward to it. We had a great time last month, and I'm looking forward to it again. Hope you'll be there. If you're not a member, be sure you join, okay? You got a little time. All right, my guest is Giorgio Tsoukalos, the editor and publisher of Legendary Times Magazine. I forget really what it was we were talking about when we went away, but the Sumerians, you know, they had depictions of our solar system with all of its planets long before modern science had discovered all those planets.
Yeah, and if I may briefly return to the Dogon, you know, what has happened, of course, with the serious mystery there is that the debunkers have tried to say that the reason why the Dogon knew about this astronomical knowledge that only came out in the 60s, that the ethnologists that visited the tribe, they told the Dogon about the invisible star. And right there, that makes absolutely no sense, because how did the missionaries or the ethnologists know something about the star system before the astronomers, number one? And number two, like I said, every 50 years they had this, still have this very special celebration in which they wear these incredible masks made out of wood. And about 8 years ago, one of these masks was dated to the 16th century. So right there, the discussion stops. It's not, you know, a figment of their imagination. It truly happened.
Well, there are some amazing stories like that. I think that's probably the most amazing one that of which I am aware. But there are amazing stories of these so-called primitive tribes with advanced knowledge.
Mm-hmm.
Look, the Mayan calendar, the Mayan calendar dates what is called the Great Year.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, now the great year is how long it takes for the precession of the Earth to make a full rotation and start again. Not precession, but the precession of the, or the movement of the pole.
Yes.
And, you know, how did they know that? You know, they knew. That's all we can say. They knew.
Yes.
I think they would say that they learned it probably from Quetzalcoatl or other gods, but debunkers, I mean, you can say that these were primitives, okay. You can say that this is mythology, okay. Now explain the precise scientific information they had.
And right there, you're faced with a teeny problem.
Well, yeah. You know, the same thing was faced by medicine, and still is, in that a lot of the so-called miracle drugs that have come out, and we're familiar with them, and they're common now, they were being used by the ancient shamans.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I just think Digitalis was being used by shamans for heart problems.
Yeah.
You know, and these come from the potions of witch doctors. You know, the stuff really worked. What about aspirin?
occurs naturally in the bark of a certain type of tree. I forget, a certain type of birch tree, I think.
Mm-hmm.
And the Native Americans were using it for fever and pain. Chew on some of this bark. Well, it occurs naturally in that bark. And you know, we call it aspirin today. You know, so a lot of the witch doctor phenomena that we have heard about from so-called modern science, you know, the fact is they're using the stuff that the witch doctors and the shamans were using. And by the way, you're Greek.
Yes, I am.
The word for sorcery in the Greek language is the same word for pharmacy.
That is correct. Apsopharmakeia, yeah, exactly. That is true. Yep.
And so when modern science downs and disses sorcery, well, gee whiz, they are the sorcerers because it has to do with drugs.
Well, I mean, that's a whole other debate because the whole sorcerer thing, it is such it's so sad how, you know, especially the Christian right has this crusade against sorcery and Harry Potter and all this. I mean, it's downright laughable, but that's a whole different discussion, but I had to say that.
Yeah. Well, but the fact is that the word sorcery comes from that same word, which means the use of potions or drugs.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. And it was a good thing. It had nothing to do with the modern idea of magic or sorcery. That's the
right.
Crazy thing.
Right.
Yes.
Yep. And so when you go to your doctor and he says, take two pills and call me in the morning, sorcery,
mm-hmm.
In its actual meaning, that's what it is.
Yeah.
And this has been going on for a long, long time. Now, we talk about the knowledge that people had of the stars, these ancient people, and that's tremendous to talk about, but I think also one of the great evidences that they had contact with beings of some kind with superior knowledge has to do with the pharmacy and the use
yes.
of
the
drugs. I mean,
Look, Apollo, a very famous Greek deity or god, he was, you know, he healed people, and that's why we have, you know, or why we had oracles. And he is known to have healed people and given them medicine at Delphi at the oracle in Greece. And then Apollo, he left them. He just, as it is written in the ancient mythologies, he took off in his chariot. And he was gone for 6 months because he went north to visit the land of the Hyperboreans, which today we think was around, you know, the Scandinavian region, Finland, Norway, Denmark, all those places, and then he came back again. But he always flew in this chariot, in this flying thing that obviously was not a horse-drawn chariot, but it was something else. That's why they never said, the ancients, he flew in a horse-drawn chariot, but if anything, he used Pegasus, who was a winged horse. So all these things, I mean, we just have to look at these from a modern perspective. Of course there was no stupid horse with wings. Are you kidding me? Maybe it was a genetic experiment. Who knows? But you know, I mean that everything was described with the words that were available at the time.
Absolutely. Listen, and speaking of time, we're just about out. I want to read this from London, from a listener in London. He says, a very strange thing is happening right now in my little study. I'm sitting in front of a luminescent box at 4 o'clock in the morning listening to two guys from the other side of the planet talking about Julius Caesar. If my grandpa was alive, he would think I've lost my mind. Lots of laughs.
That is brilliant, and that's exactly the point that we've tried to establish. So thank you, listener. That was fantastic, yes.
Giorgio, we're out of time. I know you have to rush off to do another talk show, and I want to thank you for being with us this evening.
Thank you. And like I mentioned previously, everyone, please visit legendarytimes.com. Fill in your information. I'll send you a free copy of the latest Legendary Times. And thank you very much for your support. And I can't wait to do this again, Kevin.
Outstanding. I've enjoyed it. And as I said, I know you have to go. So thanks for being with us, Giorgio. All right, folks, my friends call me Steel Eye. My enemies do, too. You can call me whatever you want. Just keep coming back again and again and again. I'll be back tomorrow night. Until then, so long, everybody.